Then comes Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 18, Description of Varnashram Dharma, Text Number 42. Bhikshur Dharma Samuhimsa.
Bhikshur Dharma Samuhimsa.
Tapa Iksha Vanokasaha. Grihino Bhutarakshidya. Dvijasyacharya Sevanam. Bhikshur Dharma Samohimsa. Tapa Iksha Vanokasaha. Grihino Bhutarakshidya. Vijasya Charya Sevanam. Bhikshu Avasanyasi. Dharmaha. The main religious principle. Samaha. Equanimity. Ahimsa. Non-violence. Tapaha. Austerity. Iksha. Discrimination. Between the body and the soul. Vana. In the forest. Okasaha. Of one dwelling. Avana Prastha. Grihina. Of a householder. Bhutaraksha. Offering shelter to all living entities. Ija. Performance of sacrifice. Dvijasya. Of a brahmachari. Acharya. The spiritual master. Sevanam. Serving. The main religious duties of a sannyasi are equanimity and non-violence. Whereas for the vanaprastha, austerity and philosophical understanding of the difference between the body and soul are prominent. The main duties of a householder are to give shelter to all living entities and perform sacrifices, and the brahmachari is mainly engaged in serving the spiritual master. Purport: the brahmachari lives in the ashram of the spiritual master and personally assists the acharya. Householders generally are entrusted with the performance of sacrifice and deity worship and should provide maintenance for all living entities. The vanaprastha must clearly understand the difference between body and soul in order to maintain his status of renunciation. And he should also perform austerities. The sannyasi should fully absorb his body, mind and words in self-realization. Having thus achieved equanimity of mind, he is the best well-wisher of all living entities. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukkam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lam Dhayate Girim Yatripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So the prominent duties here. Dharmaha, the main religious principle for each of the ashrams is presented. In the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about the divine and the demoniac. The 16th chapter is about the divine and the demoniac, and he says to Arjuna that the divine and the demons, the devotees and the demons. The devotees have what is called Devi Sampat, which is divine qualities, in other words, the qualities of a devotee. Whereas the Asuric Sampat, Asuri Sampat, is the qualifications of the demons. Pride, conceit, anger, was it Dumbo, Darbo, Bimanas, Jar, etc. Different qualities of the demons are described. And he says, of course, you know, you have the qualities of the devotees. So, there's a long list in the first three verses of the 16th chapter. There's a long list of the devotional qualities. Abhayam sattvasam shudhir, fearlessness. Purification of one's existence, cultivation of spiritual knowledge, charity, self-control, performance of sacrifice, study of the Vedas, austerity, simplicity, arajavam, non-violence, ahimsa, which is mentioned here of the sannyasi. Bhikshu, dharma, samohimsa. Samo means seeing everybody equally. Krishna says, Samoham sarvabhuteshu na dvesyo na, what is it? Priyaha. So, truthfulness, freedom from anger, renunciation, tranquility, aversion to fault-finding, compassion for all living entities, freedom from covetousness. What does that mean? Covetousness.
Seeing something,
yes, but what does it mean in specifically? Desiring something? Which is not yours, but belongs to world, Krishna, maybe to somebody else also. Covetousness. Wanting something that belongs to somebody else. Wanting to steal it off of them. Sort of the mentality of a thief. Covetousness. Gentleness. Mardavam. Hri. Modesty. Is a good quality to have, modesty. My father used to say to me when I was showing off or boasting, you know, when modesty is your best quality, because it's sarcastic. Your modesty is your best quality. In other words, you're puffed up, be quiet. Steady determination, vigor. Forgiveness, fortitude, cleanliness, and freedom from envy, and from the passion for honour. Passion for honour and modesty, they go together. Very similar. These transcendental qualities belong to godly men endowed with divine nature. And then he gives a list of the asuri. The asuras. Dambo dapo vimanas cha krodha parushyameva cha agyanam. Agyanam, what's that mean? Agyanam. Ignorant, yes. Jnanam means knowledgeable. Agyanam means lacking knowledge. Chabijatasya parta sampadam asurim. Pride, arrogance, conceit, anger, harshness, and ignorance. These qualities belong to those of demoniac nature, O son of Pritha. The divine qualities are conducive to elevation and to liberation. And so therefore they're encouraged. Whereas the dambo, dapo, vimanas, cha, the anger, pride, arrogance, ignorance, these are the qualities of the asuras, and that's what pulls the living entity down. As Prabhupada says in the purport, this is the royal road to hell. These qualifications. So, in this brief description of the main religious principles of the different ashrams, We see the prominent daivisampat, or qualifications, saintly or godly qualifications, that help to elevate a person in that particular ashram. So we have bhikshu, dharma, samohimsa. In this case, it's mentioned by who's speaking actually at this point in the Bhagavatam? Krishna. Yeah, Krishna. Krishna's pointing out the prominent duties of the sannyasi, samo. That means seeing everybody from a spiritual point of view. But it's interesting to note that the vanaprastha is meant to cultivate this understanding. Right? Vanaprastha is described here as tapa iksha vano kasaha. Vano kasaha. Vano kasaha means one who lives in the forest. Tapa, austerity, and then iksha, cultivating the understanding, the vision of seeing everybody from a spiritual perspective. In other words, you know, seeing the difference between matter and spirit. This is what our buddhi or intelligence is meant for. Buddhi means discrimination. So the power of discrimination is meant to be cultivated by the vanaprastha. Actually, these qualities are recommended for all of the ashrams and all of the varnas. But, of course, certain prominent characteristics or certain prominent qualities are emphasized for each of the different ashrams. But actually, all of them are relevant, so it doesn't mean that, you know, as a householder, then we don't have to discriminate. Or as a brahmachari, we don't have to use our discrimination. But specifically for the vanaprastha, who is preparing themselves, you know, for the sannyas ashram, or basically, you know, the whole purpose of this cultivating the daivisampat is to elevate ourselves spiritually, to be able to see everything from a spiritual perspective. You know, ultimately, what is life for? What is life for? Yeah. Good trick question. What is life for? Huh? Yeah, that's a good one. Why not? And yep, can't argue with that. Wasn't the answer that I was looking for, but certainly it's correct. What is life for? What is life a test for? Huh? Yeah. Get knowledge. Yep. Yep. Certainly. Look, I was reading in Indrajuna Maharaja's diary yesterday. He said, life is a preparation for death. Right? Because everything we do is tested at the time of death. That's how we go back home, back to Godhead. Right? So we're preparing ourselves for thinking of Krishna. Actually, that's the whole purpose of all of our activities. Got it? Satatam Vishnu Smartavya, isn't it? The whole purpose of studying the Bhagavatam, the whole purpose of studying the Bhagavad Gita, ultimately, as described by Rupa Goswami, is to remember Krishna. And never forget him. That's the purpose. The main purpose of all of the Shastra injunctions is to always remember Krishna and never forget him. So that at the time of death, when we have to leave this body and go to our next destination, then where do we go? Yes, hopefully. And of course that depends on what we're thinking of. So the cultivation of these different qualities in the different ashrams that we happen to be in is meant to help us ultimately remember Krishna. Otherwise, a Vanashram institution, in one sense, is useless. That's why, you know, Vyasadeva was criticized by Narada Muni. He said, you know, you've given all the Vedic literature, do this ritual, do that ritual, follow this prescription, follow that prescription. But if people simply get caught up in the rules and regulations but don't keep in mind the actual purpose for doing all of these things and don't remember Krishna at the time of death, then what's the point? So the whole idea is not, you know, just to be to cultivate these qualities, but these qualities are to be cultivated for the purpose of becoming Krishna conscious. So that, you know, the vanaprastha, tapa, austerity, after being absorbed in a life or after being absorbed in a grihastha ashram, wherein one's usually concerned about what? What is one concerned about in the grihastha ashram?
Money.
Money, yes. Money is the honey. Right? Is that right, Brahmakund? Yeah. What do you think, Govinda Kund, is that right? Govinda Kund is coming into the Vanaprastha stage of life. And Brahma Kund is entering into the, well, he's in the Grihastha Ashram. So, you know, Grihastha Ashram usually is complicated. Huh? It's complicated. Got to get a job, got to work hard, got to deal with so many people, business. It can be a distraction. Huh? It can be a big distraction. Dandakaranya and Vrindaranya came to visit Devamrita Maharaj on Monday, and you know, I could hear the kids crying outside, you know. And then I was tickling his daughter, and she got a really sweet smile. I said, "Oh, your kids are really cute." He said, "You should see how cute they are at 2 o'clock in the morning when they wake you up crying and screaming." Huh? So, you know, Grihastha Ashram has all of its complications. Of course, it's also essential. It's also essential because it is an ashram of purification. Actually, all of the ashrams, when we add these Daivi Sampa, these dharmic or religious principles that support our Krishna consciousness, then each of the ashrams is for our purification. You know, sometimes we make a lot of jokes about the Grihastha ashram, like, you know, how tough it is. And so then everybody thinks, "Oh, I don't want to go anywhere near that." Right? But actually, most of us have to go through that purification. We need it. We have to embrace it because on the one hand, we have this inclination towards wanting to enjoy the material energy. Right? That's our foolishness, if you like. That's the asuric aspect of our character. And we'll find, as we progress in our devotional service, we'll find that actually we're a mixture. We have this inclination for devotional service and we want to worship Krishna, but also there's the lower self. Right? Of course, Krishna says we've got to control the lower self by cultivating these Daivi Sampat, these devotional qualities, so that the higher self rules. Huh? But if we're all purely situated in the Daivi Sampat, then, you know, we'd all probably be on a Paramahamsa platform. So then, you know, we wouldn't be living in Kali Yuga, we'd be living in Satya Yuga. But unfortunately, we are living in Kali Yuga. And so therefore, you know, especially for us, this Van Ashram model has to be applied so that we cultivate these good qualities, these transcendental qualities that elevate us to Krishna consciousness and help us then deal with the samskaras of the asuric sampat, the asuric qualities. So it's always a bit of a battle. You know, sometimes, you know, we may wonder, am I a demon or am I a devotee? What is going on here? I have an inclination or an attraction to things that I shouldn't. So that's why these prescriptions are given. So sannyasi has to, the sannyasi is recommended, well, the sannyasi should be just equipoised. That's his natural position. Samo, seeing everybody equally. That's a transcendental platform of realization. In order to get to that platform of realization, one in the Vanaprastha ashram is recommended. Perform austerities and cultivate this transcendental vision. And here it's mentioned Dharma Samohimsa, non-violence. Don't commit violence to others. Because the interesting thing is, in one sense, what we've got here is a description of Vedic culture. You know, and in Vedic culture, people didn't have to be preached to follow these principles. It was automatically part of the culture, and it's what you did. In this day and age, how much of Vedic culture exists? You know, where are the sannyasis? Where are the vanaprastas? There are plenty of grihastas. Well, we don't even call them grihasta. We call them grihamedi. Right? Grihamedi means, medi means, you know, the pole or the central point. You know, when they have oxen, the Prabhupada gives the example, well, in the Bhagavatam, I think, gives the example of the oxen, grinding the grains? Anyway, they walk around, you can use oxen to generate energy, traction, and you have them walk around a pole, and then they're attached to a harness, if you like, a pole, which then you spin it around, and from that you can make energy traction. Up at New Govardhan, Gopinath Acharya built a pump where you can harness up two bullocks, and they would walk around attached to a pole that would then drive a wheel, which would then drive another wheel, and so on, and you can then use it as a pump to pump water. So the idea is you use the bullock to create traction, energy. So anyway, they walk around the pole, and the pole is the pivot. So similarly, grihamedi means a person whose life revolves around their household. Huh? And, you know, what goes on in the household. What goes on in the household. Basically, don't talk about it. Basically, it revolves around sex. This is what the Bhagavatam tells us. And, you know, then the results thereof. Children, family, relatives, house. That's why we need money. So Grihamedi is somebody who just wants to enjoy their household life. And there's no interest in spiritual culture. So where do we see the Vedic where are the brahmacharis in modern society? Where are the brahmacharis? You know, there's concern in the media about how children are now engaging in sex life at the age of 11 and 12. Right, so where are the brahmacharis? You know, I was just reading one of my devotee friends in America who's teaching. You know, she had to send a child, who I assume is only about 10 or so, off to the dean, you know, off to the principal of the school for some discipline because of some rude comments that he made to her in the classroom at, you know, assembly, you know, when you first greet with the teacher. And basically, you know, just saying things that I couldn't repeat here. This is the kind of mentality of the students, no respect for the teachers, you know, and just absorbed in, you know, chasing, the boys are chasing the girls and the girls are chasing the boys. So where are the brahmacharis? No brahmacharya. So therefore, you know, what we see in society is this asuri sampat. We don't see the daivi sampat. So how are we to apply these Vedic principles in this environment? Therefore, Prabhupada established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness so that we could introduce some of these Daivi Sampat into a culture of Krishna consciousness, where the real purpose of cultivating these qualities is established. That being that we try to connect ourselves with Krishna so that we can remember Krishna at the time of death, so that we can be always in a progressive forward movement going back home, back to Godhead. So, you know, ahimsa for the sannyasis. Prabhupada mentions to not preach is to commit violence upon others. Right? So one of Prabhupada's definitions of non-violence was to go out and preach to people. You're not the body, you're a spirit soul, which is a vision of a sannyasi. It's also the cultivation of the vanaprastha. And actually, for the householder also, the householder should also be cultivating this understanding of things, rather than getting caught up in all of household affairs. Of course, we have to do it as our duty, and we can't neglect it. But at the same time, one has to understand the spiritual basis of our existence by cultivating then the qualifications or the spiritual qualifications that are, or shall we say, the Daivi Sampat that are recommended for the householders, which here is Bhutaraksha. Offering shelter to all living entities. That's why Prabhupada said, you know, when a householder cooks his meal, then he should go out into the street and he should call out, "Is anybody hungry? Anybody like to come and have something to eat?" Right? Bhutaraksha. Protect all living entities. Huh? Or idya. Idya means performance of sacrifice. So the householders would ordinarily perform sacrifice. What's a sacrifice for us in this day and age? Yes, Sankirtan Jagya. So the householders should engage in the Sankirtan Jagya. So this is one of the challenges, if you like, for us, is to work out how to apply these Vedic principles that already existed in the culture and that people naturally followed. How do we apply that in a culture where we know that it's all asuribhav, right? It's all asuras and demons. Well, we're all asuras and demons. Maybe not you, but at least speaking personally. We have an attraction to Krishna consciousness, but we also have this bad association that we have to purify. You know, devotional service means purification. So we actually take those propensities and we channel them into these Daivi Sampat so that they become purified. That's why the Grihastha Ashram is the ashram that most people will enter into. So then how do we apply this principle? Bhutaraksha, offering shelter to all living entities, and Ija, performance of sacrifice. Anybody got any suggestions? For the householders, how do they offer shelter to all living entities?
Distributing prasadam.
Distributing prasadam? Yeah, why not? What else? How else do we give shelter to others?
Performing
harmony. Yeah. going out on Harinam. What else? Yeah, that's good for the householders, definitely. What else? Think, fellas. Tim.
Offering love and affection.
Offering love and affection. Yeah, how do you do that? Give everybody a hug? Huh? How do we offer love and affection? I mean, we do love each other. How do we show love and affection? It's a good point, but how do we practically show love and affection?
Be gentle to people.
Be gentle to people, yeah.
Be gentlemen to people.
Gentlemen, yeah. As Prabhupada said, you know, my disciples will be identified by the fact that they're gentlemen and gentle women. Not like that fellow who, you know, took that fellow aside and bashed him up. That is one way of teaching people a lesson, but generally not the prescribed method, otherwise we'd be in fights all the time. Right? Having to deal with aggressive people. You know, this was the challenge for Arjuna, that Krishna gives him all of these instructions, you know, modesty, gentleness, you know. And then he says, kill them. Right? Go and slaughter them. So what a contradiction. But each one in its right place actually is appropriate. Right? Each one in its... So what else? What's another way that we give shelter to living entities? Yeah, teach by example. Yeah, why not? We already said we've got prasadam. What's next? What's one of our main activities?
Preaching.
Yeah, preaching. And how do we do that?
Engage.
What was it?
Friends.
Make friends. Yeah, make friends. We give people books. Right? Somebody said book distribution. Book distribution. Yeah. Something that the householders should do. I was having a chat with Jagannath Rami the other day. One of the things that we want to do with the Bhakti Vriksha teams is once in a month, or as much as possible, arrange everybody into teams of as many as we can practically organise, say 5 or 6 teams on a weekend, and then we go out to some of the suburbs and we just do Harinam. Just do prasadam and do some book distribution. Huh? Which is a bit of a challenge because most of, as you're saying, that's a bit of a challenge. Because most of the Bhakti Vriksha teams are made up of Indian families, right? So that'll stretch them out of their comfort zone. You know, we have to go out on the street, we have to chant Hare Krishna. But of course, that's how all of us got stretched out of our comfort zone as devotees, pretty much. Huh? I remember when I first went out on Harinam, actually I was thinking, you know, I've got to go out on the street and chant Hare Krishna. You know, there's so many challenges when you come in the association with the devotees. There are so many challenges that you have to face. And the big one for me was, you know, having to shave my head. Because I was a bit of a hippie, so long hair was cool. Bald heads were uncool. Long hair was cool, so I had to shave my head. And then the other thing was go out on the street wearing funny clothes and chanting Hare Krishna. It's like, whoa! My friends used to say to me, the Hare Krishnas are nuts. You have to be crazy to do stuff like that. And I used to think, well, there must be a reason why they're doing it. Because you don't do something as crazy as that consistently without there being a very good reason for doing it. So, let me find out what it is. Let me find out the reason why they do it first before I judge it as being crazy. It certainly looks crazy. You know, socially unacceptable doing these things. But, you know, actually, if one goes out to spread Krishna consciousness, then this is Daivi Sampat. This is actually, you know, this is sacrifice. And giving shelter to all living entities. So it's really a responsibility of the household or community to, at some point in time, rather than just be focused on the household and the family, right? And that's the pivotal point. We should learn to see everybody as our family. Right? This is also the vision of the sannyasi. They see everybody equally, right? Some of seeing everybody. So these principles actually apply across the board. If we look at it, we can apply all of these principles across the board to all of the ashrams. So especially for the householders. We've been discussing this point. Let's every month or every 6 weeks gather the teams of devotees together. Some of the temple devotees can go out with them, and then we have a weekend marathon where we try to do as much Harinam, Sankirtan, Prasadam distribution and book distribution so that we get purified, but we also give other people an opportunity. That way we actually start to spread our reach also out to more and more people. We expose Krishna consciousness to more people. We also become purified because we're stretched from our comfort zone of, you know, I'm an Indian, or, you know, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee, and we're all chanting Hare Krishna and studying the Bhagavad Gita, which is nice, right? But the real challenge is to take Krishna consciousness and give it to others. It's not a Vedic culture anymore. And that was the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is what distinguishes our culture, if you like, of Krishna consciousness to what's being described by Krishna. You know, Atul Krishna brought this point up the other day very interestingly, you know, about how Krishna's message is for a time, place and circumstance, but Lord Chaitanya's message is a different angle on the same principles, but is very much, let's take Krishna out to the asuras, if you like, those who are cultivating non-devotional qualities. Let's take it out to them. You know, Lord Chaitanya, when he was travelling in South India, he met a devotee called Kurma. Right? And in fact, in order for us to understand how to apply these principles from the Vedic context in the current situation, as my understanding, or at least my realization, is we need to look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is why the Chaitanya Charitamrita is such an important book for us, because the Chaitanya Charitamrita is Lord Chaitanya and his immediate associates applying Krishna consciousness in an environment where it's not totally Vedic. It's of course it's a lot of the Vedic culture, but there is, you know, by that stage of Kali Yuga, a lot of misapplication of Vedic principles, right? And so if we look at the examples of Lord Chaitanya, he wanted to preach. That was his mission. So if we want to find out how to apply these Vedic principles to our current situation, we look to Lord Chaitanya and his associates, the immediate associates of Lord Chaitanya, because they're applying these principles in a preaching context, right? And taking Krishna consciousness. So there's our own purification, but that's in the context of giving it to others. And you know, we see the final qualification here, dvijasya charya sevanam. The qualification for the brahmacharis is to render service to the acharya. Right? Now, ordinarily, the brahmacharis would live in the ashram of the guru, right? And they would have personal association of the guru. He'd be telling them, get up in the morning. You know, we read this instruction where the guru, Prabhupada says, the guru would tell the disciple to eat, and if he didn't give him an instruction to eat, then he would fast. Right? Now, how would that be? How would you like it if, you know, say for as an example, this is just a somewhat humorous example, if we had a rule that you're only allowed to take prasadam if the temple president tells you to. Right? What do you think of that as an idea? Yeah, what happens if I didn't come to the temple that morning? Well, we save a bit of money, we wouldn't have to cook breakfast. But we probably wouldn't have very many devotees. In fact, one of the reasons why we have, you know, a lot of people come to this temple is because you can have something to eat whenever you feel like it. So slightly different. Slightly different. In other words, it's not the Vedic setting. But the principle of serving the Acharya is still valid. Huh? And what was Prabhupada's mission? What was Prabhupada's mood and mission? He wanted to establish Brahminical culture. He wanted to establish these Devi Sampath. But in the context of a preaching mission. Huh? There's our purification, just like we were discussing the other day, the Purushacharya practices that are performed before we are eligible for initiation. For our purification. So there are activities that we perform for our purification. But the basic principle, following on in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is preaching. Right, so getting back to the story of Kurma the Brahmana. Kurma the Brahmana got the association of Lord Chaitanya, and he was so attached to Lord Chaitanya and so inspired by the Sankirtan mission that he said, I'm going to leave home, I'm going to give up my wife and family, I'm going to give up my occupation, and I'm going to come with you. Huh? Which is what happens, you know, when a young men and women, they get inspired and they think, I'm going to give up material life and I'm just going to go and preach. Right? Which is good. It's good to be enthusiastic about these things. But, you know, reality strikes or reality hits at a certain point in time. Then we realise, I'm not a sannyasi. Maybe I'm a... What am I? Am I a... We question, am I a demon or am I a devotee? What am I? It usually means, no, actually, it's probably time to get married. That's all. You're not a demon. But you just have to be realistic about life. So anyway, Lord Chaitanya said to Kurma, no. He said, we don't want you to leave home. We don't want you to leave your family. We don't want to leave your responsibilities. But he said, yare deka tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Famous instruction from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, just talk to them about Krishna. Huh? Become a guru in that fashion. Right? So that's very much the basis of the Krishna consciousness movement, is to give Krishna to others. So in that context, in the context of preaching, we apply these Vedic principles. So, you know, the sacrifice for the householders means, as you mentioned, giving some contribution for preaching Krishna consciousness. Going out and performing Sankirtan. Sankirtan at home with the family, Prabhupada says. Aarti in the morning, aarti in the evening, offering our food to the deities. Basically, what are we doing here? Aarti in the morning, aarti in the evening, offering all of our food to the deity. You know, it's the same basic principle. That's a sacrifice. And we see that, you know, in the brahmacharis, in ISKCON, basically brahmachari. Brahmacharini means dedicating our activities wholly for the purpose of serving Krishna, but serving Krishna in the context of giving Krishna consciousness to others. That's our sacrifice, if you like. That's our what is it? Acharya Sevanam. Our service to the Acharya, Prabhupada's the founder of Acharya, is, you know, doing all of the activities that he encouraged set for the preachers. Even the deity worship is performed in the context of preaching. Right? Prasadam distribution is performed. Uttaraksha is performed in the context of preaching. The sannyasis are giving Krishna consciousness. The vanaprastas are giving, actually everybody, even the householders, are giving people an opportunity. First of all, becoming Krishna conscious ourselves, but then giving it to others. And that's a principle that we learn when we join ISKCON, especially as young men and women. That's the principle, this Acharya Sevanam. We're here to serve Srila Prabhupada and serving Prabhupada's mission. Anyway, there's more I could say, I would like to say on that point. But anyway, does anyone have any comments or questions on any of these points? Realizations?
Did
half an hour on books.
Yeah,
did you understand what he said? Did half an hour on books.
Did, like we had to be hard out, I think it was vessel.
Yeah. Last night?
No, I think it was vessel.
A few weeks ago.
Yeah. And so like we had a big group and everything there. And so I stopped these two women and they weren't interested. One wasn't interested, so yes, I'm gonna take Jesus.
That's
and
good.
Then, and then the other, you know, I said, okay, so would you like to give me donation? So she was giving me donation, the other woman she was asking, wait, I was interested in what you're saying. And then I didn't think she was. So I just, you know, say I'll distribute these books and people help out with donation. She goes, really? Yeah, I think you're a vessel. I go, yeah, like you have the big surfer and it's a big party.
So the big party.
Yeah. And then I go, yeah, this is what the whole book is about. She goes, well, I forget. Just from Harinam being in the preacher.
Yeah, Harinam is potent. Prasadam distribution is potent. Powerful. And as it, you know, you'd be surprised at what comes as a result. A saint.
It's just that, I mean, it's common in our society that a lot of people remain single kind of trend.
No, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. That's good. It depends on the individual.
I mean, I still have family and responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, well, just because one becomes a brahmachari doesn't, or one is a sannyasi doesn't mean that one has to reject everything. Huh? Renunciates. See, the unique feature of Rupa Goswami's Vairagya is Yukta Vairagya. It means using things for Krishna's service. That doesn't mean we have to give up family relations. But if we can live, in a renounced way and be happy, that's wonderful. But no. Not a problem. Then it doesn't mean you have to give up your family members. Sannyasi, maybe. There's a reason why sannyasi, one of the principles of sannyasi means, you know, no connection with the opposite gender. And Prabhupada says, especially not the wife. The sannyasi is forbidden to associate with his former wife. And Prabhupada says it's because the bond of affection is so strong that it automatically will manifest. Right? Just like when you see your mother or you see your father, then automatically there's a bond of affection, a feeling of affection for that person. Isn't it? So, assuming that your mum and dad are, you know, didn't abuse you as a child or neglect you, as is the want in this day and age, unfortunately, or as it happens. That's why sannyasi has to be very detached, set an example, and to maintain that samo dhammas, you know, see everybody equally. Yes, Penny. In a paternal way. Yes, that's well. That happens actually, and you see it especially. You know, disciples think, "Oh, my Guru Maharaj, he's going to solve all of my problems," and you know. I need to get married, so now he's going to give me, you know, my spouse, which doesn't happen. Then people say, what's going on? What's wrong with my guru? Why isn't he looking after me? A bit like, you know, your dad, why didn't you give me any Christmas presents? Or why didn't you give me more Christmas presents than I already got? The spiritual master has already given us transcendental knowledge and is connecting us to Krishna, but we want him to provide this and that and the other thing and solve all of our problems. Whereas the mood of a disciple is, actually the mood of a devotee is, dasosmi, which means I'm your servant. Right? So we tend to look to, sometimes we'll look to Krishna, or we'll look to the guru, or we'll look to the devotees, and we think, okay, solve my problems. Right? Whereas we should actually be approaching the devotees, let me be your servant. Krishna, let me be your servant. And this is not easy. Right? This is actually a very elevated platform to be on. But if we can somehow cultivate this understanding, Krishna, I am a rascal. And somehow you have been very kind and you've let me come in, into the association of the devotees. So please now let me be your servant by being a servant of the devotees. Huh? Even though I create so much disturbance for the devotees and give them so much trouble, somehow you let me stay in this. Please let me stay in their association. Let me be their servant. Then what happens is that the devotees will serve you. They'll help you solve the problems. So yes, yes, we shouldn't see the guru like our dad, sugar dad, right? Sugar daddy. Give me this, give me that, give me the other thing. No? You? Are you do that?
Question.
Yeah.
For the reverse part,
yeah.
Three things are to be attended. Looking at the head of the family, looking at the members of the family.
Yeah.
Going to the work.
Going to the what?
Going to the work. What?
Going to the river?
Work.
Oh, going to work, yes. Looking after the family, going to work, yes.
Two. And three, rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna.
Rendering service.
Hearing, chanting.
Yes. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Is there any proportion?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Because, you know, serving Krishna means so many things, and it's looking after the family, it's going to work, right? That's also serving Krishna. For the householder, that's the unique thing. The unique thing is the householder's what would ordinarily be selfish focus, if it's done in the mood of sacrifice, with that application of devotional service, and as I say, with the preaching, then our activities in the household ashram become actually part of that service. So, you know, you get the mood of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in one of his songs, he prays to Krishna. He says, Krishna, I am your dog. Right? This is your house. This is your family. Right? And I'm just a dog sleeping at the door. So that if any enemy comes to disturb your family and to disturb your house, then I'll bark. Right?
Ruff.
So in that way, you know, the householder, when we see things from the perspective that this belongs to Krishna, it's not mine, but it belongs to him. That everything I have belongs to Krishna. And that's why you get these prescriptions, like Prabhupada says, householders should give 50% of their earnings to Krishna. Because the householder, and this is elevated, he understands, wow, this all belongs to Krishna, so I should use it in Krishna's service, so then let me depend on Krishna. I'll look after my family, but I'll also look, understanding the families, not just my family, but we're all part of Krishna's family, I'll help look after them as well. So give to the preaching. So what would ordinarily be a very selfish focus, and there has to be some element of selfishness in a householder's life, to, you know, it's got his responsibility, his duty, but done in a Krishna conscious context means that all becomes purified. That's the idea. And you know, Prabhupada makes the point, he says, this is the potency of bhakti. In the other traditions, it's celibacy. No grihastha. But in the Vaishnava culture, the process of bhakti is so potent and powerful that even what would ordinarily be an entangling environment is for our purification if it is done with this cultivation of these qualities, these devi sampat. Okay, I think we should finish here. Gajra Simad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Bhaktavinda Ki Jai.